WTMR.com now.
Each and every show, as all of you know, here on America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney, Coast to Coast and all the nooks and crannies in between. One of my favorite spots, we go inside the Beltway. One of my favorite guys, the Baz, Ken Bassinet from Talk Radio News. He's with us this go around, and there's always something to talk about when it comes to what's happening in Washington, D.C. Hey, Baz, how are you?
You know, recovered from the weekend.
Yes, we will tell everyone. Behind the mic would be, I won't give away too many secrets, but we happen to be attending the same party for Ellen Ratner, who some of you, many of you have heard on the air, too, as well here on America Tonight. She had a big birthday celebration, her 30th birthday, and a few hundred of her friends came out to the Central Park Zoo. 400 of them, to be exact.
And anybody can rent the zoo at Central Park, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a song, I'm sure, to do that, close it down,
right.
Have the penguins do a show, and then have the sea lions do a show for you. Are you kidding?
Open bars.
Yeah. Crazy.
6 food tables.
Yeah.
You know,
it's nutty.
It was really something, what I remember of it.
There you go. Hey, speaking of remembering, that's what they're doing constantly. They're keeping score on the Hill, but you know this because you've covered Washington for 17 years. The latest shot was the Senate Majority Leader, of course, Harry Reid, warning that there's a chance that what? The government could shut down by the end of the month. And this is all about the Republicans and the Democrats going back and forth on the disaster relief provisions in the budget bill.
It's amazing that we could come through Hurricane Irene, all that damage. We saw what happened to Pennsylvania, Vermont. Even Eric Cantor, his state of Virginia took a big hit. I mean, it's just breathtaking. And, of course, that's where this all began, Kate, when Eric Cantor suggested, right as Americans were suffering with all that flooding up and down the East Coast, the GOP majority leader in the House of Representatives, Eric Cantor, Richmond, Virginia, if you want to find him, folks, and send him an email or whatever, that's where he is, suggests, well, we should maybe negotiate whether we're going to help these people out. And now here we are. And you hit the nail right on the head. Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, stunned, and he said today, and I'm quoting here, the Tea Party-driven House of Representatives has been so unreasonable in the past that, you know, I don't know why we should expect them to suddenly be reasonable. And he wholeheartedly believes they are going to shut this thing down. It's breathtaking.
Wow, no kidding.
Now Reid announced today that the Senate will attach a $6.9 billion emergency stopgap measure for FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. That is not money that's going to go to, pick one of the albatrosses the GOP goes after, Planned Parenthood, for instance, right? We're talking about states that have been hammered by floods, hurricanes. We had the tornadoes earlier this year. All of this stuff adds up. But when have we ever questioned, you know, whether or not we're going to take care of our fellow Americans? It's really breathtaking. And I potentially, as you can see, I kind of have an opinion on this one.
Sure.
I'm not playing this one down the middle. But, Kate, you have to wonder, will there not be a backlash towards the Republicans for this?
Well, certainly for the people in those states that are struggling, because the first thing you do is you file for FEMA relief. You do that immediately, and all of those governors did right away in front of Irene. And, of course, we're talking about disaster after disaster after disaster, and there's no way they need the federal funding. They need the money, period.
Yeah. And what's really interesting is, you know, Cantor tried to fire back at Reid. You know, he said, you know, it'll be on his shoulders because he's the one who's playing politics with it.
Yeah.
You know, and here's the audacity of Cantor. He then further says, and I'm quoting here, no one wants to stand in the way of disaster money. Hey, that's not what you said 2 weeks ago, buddy. You know, it's really, you know, it's as if they think that we have no institutional memory, or more importantly, that we don't have it on tape. You know, I mean, it's really something.
Yeah, everything's on tape now. Are you kidding? On Twitter, on Facebook, there's no way you can recant, pardon the pun, what you say without being caught, because it's easy to dig that stuff up. Hey, what about the poll that came out on Obama and Jobs? That's kind of flipped things around.
It's really something. The president's having a good week. He's armed and ready to take on the Tea Party-led GOP now that he's seeing some support for financing his jobs plan with spending cuts and restoring the tax rates to 1990s levels for richest Americans. And we're talking about significant numbers here, you know, like 61%, 72%, depending on how you ask the question. Majority of Americans favor, you know, Obama paying for his latest jobs plan by taxing the wealthy and wiping out tax breaks for some corporations. That is a big turnaround, but people are having enough of it. And I think that's why you're hearing so much of this stuff about, you know, oh, this is, this is class warfare. And Speaker Boehner saying, you know, this is like giving cocaine to a cocaine addict, talking about money for Congress. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's heavy rhetoric. But, you know, what Obama's allies are saying is, you know, the reason why we're hearing such loaded blowback from the people on the right is because Obama's landing punches now. There's a sting that's going along with this, you know? And, you know, I think probably, you know, this isn't a poll. This is anecdotal, but it's significant. And that is now the fractured ranks of the Democratic left is liking what they're hearing from Obama regarding his newly announced $3.2 trillion deficit reduction plan.
Yeah.
You know, and again, that includes taxing the richest Americans at the same rate as middle class taxpayers. And, you know, you have Michael Moore out there saying, hey, we're back. I spoke to some folks today in the gay community who are real activists. I mean, real agitators and ringleaders, people who voted for the president in 2008 and really felt that he dragged his feet on the on Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah.
Well, the combination of what they're hearing from him yesterday in the Rose Garden in terms of attacking the Republicans and saying enough is enough, combined with the fact that Don't Ask, Don't Tell was finally wiped off the books overnight,
mm-hmm.
They're basically saying we're very happy now. And that's a big deal. Those aren't just votes. That's a community that digs deep into their wallet for the president.
Yeah, and that's the liberal side that was starting to really wane, right?
Oh, how many times did we talk about that, you know, during our previous conversation?
Yeah.
The fact that the president had a problem with his base.
Yeah.
And if he shores up his base early on, that allows him to spend more time down the stretch focusing on the middle. The independent voters, the moderate independents, who in an awful lot of states will decide the outcome of the election.
Yeah, I agree. The independents is where it's at, I think.
Yeah,
that's where the
deal.
Battle is. Yeah. But traditionally, independents normally go the side of the Democrats.
Do they?
I think so. I think the majority. I mean,
yeah.
I like how you say that. Do they? You sound like a Democratic strategist panicking.
No, I'll tell you why, because they did the swing the other way in 2020.
Yes, that's true.
In those Tea Party people.
That's true. Through the midterm elections.
A lot of them right now are saying, yeah, I'm not doing that again.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
And listen, I don't mean to get down on the Republicans. They have plenty of time to pull things off here. Look at Rick Perry.
Yeah.
When you and I were first talking about Rick Perry this week, we were like, this guy's nuts.
I know.
Now
look.
He's sounding pretty sensible.
Yeah, he is. He is, and he's certainly getting a lot of attention. We're out of time. Ken Bassinet, thanks so much. The Baz, Talk Radio News. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
As many people know, ever since President Nixon took us off the gold standard, the U.S. dollar has been devaluing. What people don't know, however, is how this directly affects your personal finances. Is there a way to protect your portfolios from losing value? The answer to all of this is gold and silver. They both have maintained their purchasing power for 6,000 years. If you had $100,000 in cash and $100,000 in gold and silver back in 1913 and kept them until now, your cash would have the buying power of only $4,800. But your gold and silver would have the buying power of $3 million. The answer to protecting your assets is simple. Call John Ballman today at 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Get all your questions answered before your money is worth a zero. Call 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Take action today while we still accept paper dollars for gold. That's 1-800-686-2237, extension 169.
I have bought a few bottles of Heart and Body Extract and have to say that it certainly does work.
That's what Jack from Michigan had to say after his experience with heart pain and what he did to treat it with Heart and Body Extract.
I actually had a huge heart flutter. I was also having some edema around my ankles and very worrisome clot in my right leg that would happen from time to time while I was trying to sleep.
Heart and Body Extract is all natural with no negative side effects. It will help repair or correct past problems associated with the heart and body circulation.
After my second bottle of Heart and Body Extract, all problems are now gone.
Order at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
I ordered a third bottle of Heart and Body Extract for maintenance, as I want to keep everything working.
Order Heart and Body Extract at 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
In this version of For Your Health, you're going to be shocked by some of the statistics I'm going to throw out at you right from the get-go. Did you know about 22.6 million Americans aged 12 and older use illicit drugs? They did in 2010. Do you know if we take that number further, that would be nearly 8.9% of the U.S. population? Wow. Medical use is on the rise. We've been talking about that certainly on this show. What does it all mean? And then we're talking about young adults, 18 to 25. Illicit drugs up from 19.6% in 2008 to 21.5% in 2010. And that doesn't even include, remember all the whole farm party stuff and whatnot that we've talked about. But focusing on the medical abuse in America, as pointed out in a huge government study the other week, a couple of weeks ago. We are so pleased to welcome to the show Dr. Harris Straitner, and what a title he has. He is the regional clinical VP of all the Karen treatment centers, and he's based in New York. Doc, I know you're a busy guy. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
So marijuana use, you're a doctor, so I'm just going to ask you this, and obviously you're dealing with this with the treatment centers. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I think there are a lot of factors. Youngsters certainly, as the recent Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration SAMHSA survey showed, are using it a tremendous amount. I mean, we're talking about kids who are 12 years or older, and we're just seeing it go up an astronomical rate. And what I attribute it to is the fact that youngsters think this is a safe drug, and it's not. It's a very dangerous drug. The chemical, the psychoactive chemical in marijuana, tetrahydrocannabinol, is very dangerous to the brain. It affects brains. As far as we can tell from PET scans and other techniques of looking at the brain develops usually through the age of 25. And youngsters are affecting their executive functioning with marijuana use. you know, decision-making ability, which is associated with the frontal lobe of their brain. Marijuana also has over 400 chemicals in it, and is also a carcinogen. Some studies show it's a stronger carcinogen than the cigarettes. And I think a lot of youngsters whose parents are baby boomers, and we're not blaming parents, but, you know, need to realize that the marijuana that their parents smoked, even though that probably wasn't a good idea, was very different than the marijuana that they're smoking today. Again, the concentration of tetrahydrocannabinol is far greater in today's marijuana, and it has also been shown to be a gateway drug to other drug use. And the scary thing, Kate, that frightens me the most as an addictionologist is that a lot of kids blaze or smoke marijuana before they ingest alcohol. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen kids who have had alcohol poisoning as a result, because marijuana is an antiemetic. It prevents you, you know, it not prevents, but it certainly leans in the direction of helping to prevent you from vomiting. So if you smoke marijuana first and then you drink and you get alcohol poisoning and you're not prone to vomiting because you were smoking marijuana, you're in a lot of trouble. And we see this all the time at Karen treatment centers. I send more youngsters to Karen for marijuana use than any other drug, period. Any other drug, and that's frightening. And I think it's because parents, you know, they say, oh, it's just marijuana.
Sure.
Oh, just experimenting. And what we have to start to press, and I'm, you know, I'm a pretty liberal guy, but what we have to start to press is zero tolerance. When your kids are messing around with their brain, when you've got a drug that can be utilized that can increase your chances of having schizophrenia if you're genetically predisposed to that illness, then you've got to tell your kids, I don't want you messing around with that. I don't want you using marijuana. It's a hallucinogen. It can cause paranoia. It can cause delusions. It can cause hallucinations. And it can really feed into a lot of youngsters that we see at Karen treatment centers who have co-occurring disorders, things like bipolar disorder, anxiety disorders, you know, generalized anxiety disorder. We see so many kids at Karen treatment center who have what are referred to as co-occurring disorders, schizoaffective disorder, personality disorders, and the marijuana just, it's like pouring gasoline on a fire.
Oh, how sad is that? And I like the fact that you told us that, you know, hey, you're a liberal guy, but, you know, you got to take a look at this and say zero tolerance. Because I know there's people listening that are saying, oh, Kate, what are we talking about this for? It's just a little weed. But it's not just a little weed anymore. As you explained, it's not, you know, it's not your father's marijuana. It's a whole different situation with what you're seeing. Do you think that the fact that we have the legal use of marijuana, medical marijuana, is that also leading some of these kids to say, well, really, we have medical marijuana. It's all over the headlines. It's been voted on in various states. And so how bad can it be?
I mean, I certainly think that it is all over the headlines. I tend to concentrate more on marijuana, you know, as a representative Karen Treatment Center as a clinician, as just being a dangerous, illicit drug. So I don't focus too much on medical marijuana.
Wow.
It's a tricky area.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, I'm a father, and I'm telling you, I'm a very liberal guy. I'm known for something called Care Frontation, where I treat people with dignity and respect. I don't shame or blame them, but I hold youngsters who I send to Karen or who I treat in my practice responsible for dealing with issues. And I got to tell you, my 22-year-old daughter never has smoked marijuana. And if she did, we'd have serious problems because as a scientist, I know it causes damage to the developing brain. I mean, think about that. I'm in the field.
Yeah.
And I'm not in recovery, by the way. Okay, you know, I'm not a recovering alcoholic, but I'm in the field. And I'm telling you as a scientist, I'm telling you as an associate professor at a major medical school, I would be very frightened if my daughter smoked marijuana. I really don't like it. The fact that they're starting to have applications on iPhone teaching kids how to roll marijuana is frightening to me. I think that, you know, there are certain companies that better take a real good look at that, because that's a lawsuit waiting to happen. I just think that the thing we have to impress upon our youngsters is that why not experience life straight up and the beauty of life? And this may sound corny, but I believe it in my soul. Straight ahead. Look at the spirituality of life. Look at the beauty of life before you have to go out and get high. You know, there's nothing wrong with going surfing, with getting involved in different sports, with being involved in the arts. You know, my godfather was Dizzy Gillespie, the jazz trumpet player. And I grew up around the jazz world.
Wow.
I'm a jazz musician, and I have a radio show for 23, almost 24 years, which the second half is always jazz. And we always associated, you know, jazz musicians with doing this and doing that. I got to tell you, if I ever touched marijuana, my godfather, God rest his soul, would have broken my head. And that was back then, and I'm in my 50s. It's just not a good way to go. And it also speaks to the fact that youngsters are getting bored, and they're trying to come up with ways to escape. And the sad thing to me, when I send a kid to care and treatment centers, or again in my practice, when I see kids who come in who are really hurting, who are having anxiety disorders and self-medicating with marijuana, and then they get paranoia on top of anxiety, the thing that really, really frightens me is that they don't take the time to discover that this is a great world we live in. And when you were asking me before, what do I think has contributed to the rise that we saw in the SAMHSA study of marijuana use, I think one of the things is what's going on in the world. I think that a lot of kids try to escape. They try to escape financial situations with their parents. They worry about their grades, the increase in a lot of things that go on in the school, the level of work, competition in athletics, et cetera. And instead, what youngsters need to do, if they really want to lay back and chill, is realize all they have to do is try their best. All they have to do is try to enjoy and realize the joys of this wonderful thing we call life every day, one day at a time. We just celebrated the 10th anniversary of September 11th.
Mm.
Celebrated is an ironic word.
I know.
But, you know, Thoreau once said, the past is ashes. Yesterday's over. What we have to inculcate in youngsters is that they need to focus on the moment and to enjoy the moment. And to smoke marijuana is completely blowing the moment and also blowing their future.
Such an excellent conversation. Life straight up. Dr. Harris Strager.
Do you live where ice storms, blizzards, tornadoes, floods, earthquakes, or hurricanes occur? Who doesn't? Well, most of us do, and when they occur, one of the first things to happen is the power goes out. When Hurricane Irene hit, over 5 million homes were without power. Just having light around the house becomes very important. Arm yourself with the new 50-hour emergency candle in a can. Just pull the pop-top lid. The matches are safe inside and light up the candle for 50 hours of continuous light. The candle and matches are together when you need them the most. Emergency light that has an indefinite shelf life, always ready and won't go dead like batteries. 50-hour emergency candles are $7.95 each or four for $28. Call toll-free 1-855-485-8555, 855-485-8555, or order online at candlesincans.com. One more time, that's 855-485-8555, or visit us at candlesincans.com.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Fight back this cold and flu season with the world's best garlic extract, Alley C. Why Alley C? Because it helps your body fight viruses, bacteria, and fungi. Alley C has been scientifically proven in double-blind studies using low doses to greatly reduce the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Alley C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin, the active ingredient in crushed garlic. Studies show Alley C is effective against MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections. One tablet of Alley C has the equivalent of 40 cloves of garlic. Alley C supports your body's resistance to all types of conditions and can help lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. So boost your body's resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Alley C. For more information and to order Alley C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 1-877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com for your Alley C today.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours, too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for three decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
The American people think they live in a constitutional republic. Land of the free, home of the brave. Right.
Just try those lines on the judge when you get a ticket or have to deal with a big bad IRS.
Instead, use escapeharassment.com. Since 1972, our volunteer group of researchers and educators have successfully taught how to escape tickets by law, and it works. Escape Harassment has three different steps to follow, depending on where you are in the ticket process. Learn how to escape tickets, IRS, or court proceedings before you go to court. For free, three-minute pre-recorded information and FAQs, call this toll-free number, 1-877-457-9009. That's 877-457-9009. Or go to escapeharassment.com and see our money back guarantee. That's escapeharassment.com. Remember, escape harassment works.
For the past 76 years, some of the biggest talk during college football season is not only who's the best team at the collegiate level, but the best player. This is the Sports Princess. That story next on Sports Shorts.
This Your Family Today tip is brought to you by Tombstone Pizza. With multiple varieties to choose from, there's a Tombstone Pizza that's sure to please your family. What do you want on your tombstone? Family dinner is important, but who says it has to be at the table? When life gets busy and the pressure is on, pull out the good paper plates and settle in for pizza and a movie. It's fun, easy, and memorable for the whole family. For more tips like these, visit us at parenthood.com/yourfamilytoday.
It started in 1935 when New York City's Downtown Athletic Club started handing out the hardware for the best player. The trophy is named to honor one of the club's athletic directors, John Heisman, after his death in 1936. Heisman played football at Brown and Penn, also coached at a lot of colleges, including Auburn and Clemson, and he was the athletic director at Georgia Tech. The Heisman is handed out in early December before the postseason. Sports journalists vote on who is the best. Ohio State's Archie Griffin is the only player to win the award twice. He did in the mid-70s. So far this season, Stanford's quarterback Andrew Luck and Oklahoma wideout Ryan Broyles are both on the short list. But there's still a lot of college football to be played between now and December. This is the Sports Princess with Sports Shorts.
Yeah.
going to love our next conversation with Stephen Shohat. He joins us each and every Tuesday here on ATN. And I started to think about this. How many episodes of Star Trek have you watched in your life? And, you know, I'm not a Trekkie, but when I was a kid, my brother liked to watch Star Trek, and so I kind of got sucked into it. And then of all things, my mother didn't watch the television series, but she watched the movie. She loved the Star Trek movies. So I've definitely seen all of the movies, and some of them are, I thought, were so well done. And, you know, it was tough when you realize, oh, I don't think there's any more Star Trek flicks left, because I enjoyed them too, waiting for them, just like the Bond flicks. Bond and Star Trek, for me, that was the 1-2 punch. So, is it Captain Kirk? Is it Dr. McCoy? Who is your favorite? Is it, Spock? A lot of people like Spock. And still today, the power of Star Trek lives on. Because you can tell with the conventions, I mean, the people who are way over the top with it just absolutely love it. It's actually pretty cool to go to a Trekkie convention. And then, of course, for Halloween, people still dress up as Star Trek characters. So 45 years, think about that. Think about how many episodes you might have seen. 45th year of it, wow. Steven, in now from the green room. Steven, were you a big Star Trek fan?
Absolutely. I you know, I'm still a big fan of the original series, not so much the subsequent series. But I'll tell you, Kate, I loved the movie in 2009. I know a lot of fans complained, oh, they broke canon and they changed things. But, I mean, I thought it was a great fresh start. I thought it was exciting. And I'm looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, I agree with you, too. I loved the one in 2009. In fact, I just rewatched it the other day. I liked it. I liked going, you know, what do they call it, the prequel.
A prequel and also leaving it open so you could have new adventures with the old characters and that element of suspense that they brought back. And I know people don't like time travel stories a lot of the time, but you think about it, like when you have Batman or James Bond, they just start all over. No explanation. They're going to do that with Spider-Man. At least with Star Trek, they tried to have an explanation. I mean, with the time travel and how you could have this alternate situation. And I personally think, and it's just an opinion, that that's more respectful than saying, okay, everything we did before, we've thrown it out with no explanation, which they do all the time with other franchises.
Yeah. How did this show start? How did Star Trek come to even be?
It's so fascinating. Gene Roddenberry, former policeman in Los Angeles, had gotten into screenwriting by sort of intimidating an agent at a restaurant called the Cock and Bull. The agent's name was Swifty Lazar, and Gene Roddenberry was this big motorcycle cop, and he said he came into the restaurant and yelled out, "Swifty Lazar, is he here?" And for whatever reason, Swifty Lazar was scared that this police officer was stalking him, and he said, "I'm here, officer. What do you want? You're Swifty Lazar. Read this." And he shoved the script in Lazar's hand, and Lazar was so impressed, he took Roddenberry on as a client. And then Roddenberry wrote several scripts, but the first show that he wrote that he produced was called The Lieutenant. And on that show, you see Nichelle Nichols and Leonard Nimoy. Nichelle Nichols was a really good actress, by the way, on that show. And it was about a Marine lieutenant, and sometimes they would do these stories on the show that the Pentagon was not happy about, shows dealing with racism or other issues. And so NBC, even though the show was obviously high quality, NBC said, well, we're not going to renew this. So then Gene Roddenberry was at a baseball game telling a friend of his he wanted to do a show set in the 19th century about people of different races traveling around and to different areas every week, like Wagon Train. And the friend said, well, you know, I can't see the different races mixing together at that time. Maybe 300 years from now. So that innocuous comment supposedly, and you know, there's a bit of lore here, supposedly inspired Gene Roddenberry to go the other direction and go with the futuristic concept, which he called Wagon Train to the Stars, which eventually became known as Star Trek. And it was a very difficult show to get off the ground because you have all these different planets every week. It's going to be very, very expensive. But finally, it was Lucille Ball who decided to go ahead and use some money that she had, development money from CBS Television, to finance the pilot for Star Trek. And the pilot was much different from what we ended up with. I mean, you had, see, Gene Roddenberry had based Mr. Spock on the police chief of Los Angeles, Chief Parker, who was this very efficient officer, but also very sort of cold and taciturn. And the unemotional character that they had on the show originally was not Mr. Spock, but was Majel Barrett, who played Number One, the first officer. And she was sort of had the Mr. Spock personality. And Leonard Nimoy was playing the character of Mr. Spock with great emotion. And then the director told him, Leonard, you're a scientist. You know, you have to be detached. And that made Leonard Nimoy think about the character in a different way. Now the captain was originally Jeffrey Hunter, and Leonard Nimoy felt that Jeffrey Hunter was such a low-key actor that if he downplayed Mr. Spock, the scenes would just die. So he had to do it with some emotion. Well, of course, Jeffrey Hunter was replaced after the first episode by William Shatner. Now William, see Captain Kirk was described as sort of a cross between Horatio Hornblower and Hamlet, and Shatner had Shakespearean training, so that was good, and also you have, you know, these moments of indecision where you've got, you know, the emotional arguments being made by Dr. McCoy and the logical argument is being made by Mr. Spock, and Shatner has to decide. But anyway, Leonard Nimoy felt as soon as Shatner came in, he had so much energy that Leonard Nimoy could downplay Mr. Spock and play him in that laconic, less emotional way, and then Mr. Spock started to become the Mr. Spock that we know.
Yeah, no kidding. I could talk about this all night long. We're almost out of time, though. When did the show really, really take off?
After it was canceled, unfortunately, for the actors. I mean, you know, I tell a story in my book, Hollywood Stories, about Charlie Chaplin, that, you know, he was so famous, and yet that mustache was painted on, and he was barely recognized. He entered a Charlie Chaplin lookalike contest, and he lost, but he was very, very rich. Well, you know what's the opposite of that is Walter Koenig, who played Mr. Chekhov. He was recognized wherever he went, but he couldn't pay for his groceries because the show was canceled and he had nothing going on. So I mean, that's what happened after 3 years. But what really made it take off was the moon landing, the Apollo 11. And as soon as that happened, that's when the show began to kill it in reruns, and the actors were not in a position to benefit directly from it, but luckily for them, they were able to indirectly benefit from it with the Star Trek conventions, which were phenomenal, and they started getting paid huge money for personal appearances.
Wrath of Khan, was that your favorite? You mentioned the last movie, but did you like that movie?
You know what? Wrath of Khan's now my second favorite. It was my favorite until this new one came out.
Yeah, me too. There's something about that. I mean, that was just a great movie. I've probably seen it maybe 20 times. Who knows how many times you've seen it, but.
And it was so unexpected because the first one was such a disappointment, I think, to a lot of people. So you think the franchise is dead, and then they come up with this second one, and I think Leonard Nimoy was very surprised because he thought, we're done. Oh, okay, I'll get killed. Wait a minute, this is fun. I don't want to get killed. So he got resurrected.
Yeah, you gotta love that. Stephen Shohat, always fun to chat with you. Author of Hollywood Stories, short, entertaining anecdotes about the stars and legends of the movie. See, he knows all this stuff. Pick up his book, you'll love it. You can get it at Barnes & Noble and Amazon. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it.
Thanks, Stephen. I guarantee that every single one of you has at least seen an episode or one of the movies, even if it was the one that just came out in 2009 that we were talking about, when it comes to Star Trek. And I said, you know, who's your favorite character? And I hate to say it, it's so cliche, but for me it's got to be Captain Kirk. I think he was my favorite. Stay with us. Coming up next, a way to get in shape. Every week we talk to pharmacist Ben. He's got more suggestions. Stay with us.
Did you know nuclear radiation is still spewing out of the melted down reactors in Fukushima, Japan, and making its way across the entire U.S. continent, contaminating the air, water, and food? Dangerously high levels of radiation are a reality here. As a result, radiation poisoning is a distinct possibility for anyone living in the U.S. unless you do something to protect yourself. How? With liquid zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Without a doubt, liquid zeolite is by far the best product to remove radiation from your body. It safely removes toxins and heavy metals, boosts energy levels, and promotes a strong immune system. Liquid zeolite is so powerful it was used to clean up contamination in Chernobyl, yet so gentle you won't even know you're taking it. Liquid zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee, but is only available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of liquid zeolite by calling 800-880-9976. That's 800-880-9976. Or go to RestoreYourHealthNow.com. That's RestoreYourHealthNow.com.
Are you tired of spending money for metal canning lids year after year? Then stop! Stop buying metal lids and get Tatler reusable canning lids. Made of USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, Tatler canning lids let you safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways that contain BPA, but Tatler canning lids are indefinitely reusable and guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning and contain no BPA. Tatler lids are dishwasher safe, perfect for standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders by phone at 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's 1-877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com. Tatler Reusable Canning Lids, the original since 1976.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it,
now you can.
Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go.
Now you can build food storage without going into debt.
Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month.
Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy Clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amount. Hurry, go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Welcome back to America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney. As always, you know, every single week we've been talking to pharmacist Ben, my buddy, who's helping me get it straight nutritionally. I've said this and I'll say it again. I never took vitamins. I never took minerals. None of that stuff. And maybe I'm really lucky that I'm healthy. Now I feel like I'm really getting healthy and helping out my metabolism. It's amazing the changes that I've seen with one of the things that I'm doing, taking Beyond Tangy Tangerine. Many of you have emailed me, asked me about it. And listen, I always say this up front. You go to AmericaTonightTeam.com and there's just products and you could get Beyond Tangy Tangerine for a song. I know because I pay for it. I buy it myself. It's cheap and it works. That's the key thing. It's one of the most amazing things that I think I've ever done for myself. And I was definitely skeptical at first, wasn't I, Pharmacist Ben?
You were.
were. You were a typical New York skeptic, actually.
I was, because I really, you hear all these things, oh, go do this, do that, and they're so extreme and ridiculous.
I love skepticism. I hate blind trust. I hate blind faith. In pharmacy, we always hate when somebody comes up to this counter and doesn't look at their medicine before they buy it, or doesn't ask questions before they buy it. We always want people to be skeptical, cynical, ask questions. You want to know everything you can know. So I appreciate a good skeptic, because then when it works, then you are like the best, you're the best testimonial there is, because you were skeptical and you actually didn't even believe it and you actually saw the result. That's what a scientist
absolutely.
Is always skeptical. Scientists are always skeptical.
Absolutely. And I wasn't going to do it. And then I decided to do it. I decided, okay, well, I'm going to try this because I like the way it tastes. It's fine. I'll see what happens. And now I drag it around with me. So in other words, I put it in my water bottles. I was just away for the weekend. I did that when I was walking around. I had the Beyond Tangy Tangerine mixture and I wasn't starving. You know, I could smell the pretzels and all the crazy things the street vendors have in New York because I was in New York City. And you know, guys, the old Kate would have definitely done it. I would have definitely said, my gosh, I'm home. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to eat this, and I didn't.
That's why I like the Beyond Tangy Tangerine so much, because it's liquid. It goes to work really quickly. And here's one of the neatest things about nutrition. Of all the really neat things about nutrition, this is, to me, is the most interesting and the most positive, and that is that the more deficient you are, the faster you notice results. So that if you're really deficient and you start doing that Beyond Tangy Tangerine, within days you're starting to notice results. And that's why I really like people to use that one first. Before they use anything else, use the Beyond Tangy Tangerine, because if you're like a typical American and you're not, haven't been savvy to some of these ideas, and it's the first time you've heard them, when you start to take in that Beyond Tangy Tangerine, you will be a believer. You will be a believer. And from that point forward, it becomes much easier to start to incorporate some things into your life. Like what you're experiencing, how you said you could withstand those urges, it's going to only get more and more dramatic. Your ability to withstand the foods that you think you absolutely have to have, including ice cream, including French fries, the most fundamental foods, you'll be able to it won't be like you'll have to struggle or have to fight anything. You'll just be able to withstand the urges. And you know what, Kate? If your system is clean at the end of a year or 2 years, it's super clean. If you happen to have, if there's a piece of pizza there, and for whatever reason you want to have a piece of pizza, your body will be able to handle that much more effectively. So it's not going to be like you'll never see pizza again or you'll never see ice cream again. You don't have to be worried about that. Not that you're going to – very good light possibility you may not want the ice cream. Let me tell you something. I used to eat a pint of Ben & Jerry's by myself, Kate. A pint of Ben & Jerry's.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Not Ben & Jerry's. Haagen-Dazs. I'm sorry. Haagen-Dazs Caraway. I would eat the whole damn pint. You know? And I'm telling you, I haven't had ice cream in 10 years. I don't even like the smell of ice cream. And that's, I've been supplementing pretty intensely for about 15, maybe 12, 13 years. And the last time I had ice cream was about 10 years ago. I don't even want it. Doesn't even occur to me. And when I see it, it's like I don't even like the smell of it. So you'll get to a point where you might not even like it. But if you did want some ice cream, or you did want a hamburger, God forbid, I hate those things, man. Or if you wanted, or if you wanted a piece of pizza, you would be able to, your body would be able to handle it much more effectively than it can handle it now.
Yeah, well, this is a good question to ask you for people listening and getting to know you here, and certainly in this audience for America Tonight. Well, obviously, you went into the pharmaceutical business and became a pharmacist, so I can see why you would want to be healthy and get minerals and all that kind of stuff in your system. But what else drove you to that? Was there something else that drove you to get
food,
really healthy?
About nutrition?
Yeah.
I went to pharmacy school because I wanted to study food as drugs. And it never occurred to me that when you're in pharmacy school, you do some of that, but you don't really emphasize that. You emphasize drugs as drugs. And when I went to the dean and told him what I was up to, they give you a little preliminary interview, he thought that was really funny, and he told me that we don't do that here. We just use drugs. By that time, I was already committed, so I just went ahead and did it. But I was always fascinated with food and nutrients as medicines. And in pharmacy school, we study, I don't know if I ever told you this, but in pharmacy school, we study the medicinal properties of vitamins and the medicinal properties of minerals, how they work as medicines. And we also study diseases as if they were nutritional deficiencies, diabetes, and eczema, and psoriasis, and arthritis, all the nutritional deficiency components that cause diseases. So it was just kind of like a natural
a progression for me to really start to understand how to use nutrients and begin to use them in my life. But I didn't personally get into supplementing until I started to reach, you know, it wasn't middle age for me. It was my middle 30s is when I started to notice that I couldn't do those things. You and I talked about this, the wall. Did we ever talk about the wall?
Yeah, tell us about the wall.
The wall is when you're partying, you know, you're in your teens and your 20s. You can go out and party. You go to work the next day, right? You're good. You go out and party again. And you can party four times a week. I don't know if this was UK, but this was me. And a lot of my friends and a lot of people I know. And you do whatever. You know, you could smoke, you could drink, you could just party and go to work, and you're so skinny. You could eat anything you want to eat. And then all of a sudden, around age 28, you hit the wall. And most people don't adjust. And so what happens is you hit the wall at 28 and all of a sudden you can't party so much, but you're still partying. You're still doing it, but you can't do it as well. And
right.
You can't eat the same thing. I mean, you're still eating, but you shouldn't be eating. You start to get a little fat around the middle, and that's what happened to me. I hit the wall. I started to get fat around the middle. I couldn't party like I used to party, and all of a sudden the weight started to gain. You know, I was always the same weight, and then I get on a scale, I'm 5 pounds more, and I'm ignoring it, and 5 pounds more, I'm ignoring it, pretty soon I'm 30 pounds more.
Oh.
Right? And
yeah.
So, and I know nutrition, I've studied it, I knew this stuff hardcore, so I decided to really start to work with what I knew was true from a metabolic standpoint, from a biochemistry standpoint. All things I talk about, lowering your calories, getting nutritional supplements in, understanding your digestive system, and I lost almost 50 pounds.
Wow.
And I feel great, and people don't guess that I'm 50 going on 51, and I know it works, and I've seen it work with other people as well, not just me, and it makes biochemical sense is the bottom line.
Yeah. So it's good that we talked about that the fact that you see those changes, because as you say this all the time, and for all those guys out there listening, trust me, I know with all my poker playing days, you know, it's not about willpower. You say that. It's not about willpower.
Yeah. I hate willpower. Willpower makes it sound like it's a battle, and a battle's not good. We got plenty of battles out there. We don't need one inside our body, which is what willpower is, right?
Yeah.
It should be like fruit falling off a tree. You don't pick the fruit don't shake the tree if the fruit ain't ripe, right?
Yeah, that's right. I agree.
So let it happen. Let it happen on its own. Don't fight nature. If your brain is saying to you, go get this, you probably need it, and don't fight it. But reach a point of understanding your body, being savvy and hip to the language of your body so that you can hit those hot buttons, you can hit those satiety buttons, and naturally just gravitate away. That doesn't look good to me. You know, and it just doesn't look good. That's how it should be.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. So let's end on this. For people, what's going to happen, and this is, I get this, when we said this last time, when people want something to eat, they want snacks, whatever, because you're not going to stop snacking if you just really want to reach for something. What do you do?
Awesome question. There's two strategies. Number one, a combination of veggies and oil and salt. And make sure you salt food with Celtic sea salt, with Himalayan salt, which are good mineral-rich salts. They're not just Morton's. Morton's is, you know, sodium chloride processed stuff, and it doesn't give you the nutrients you need. Celtic sea salt, Himalayan salt. Sprinkle it on veggies, and then oil, lots of oil. The secret is in the oil. We have hot buttons for oil, and we have hot buttons for salt. So you want to hit those. So you get yourself the oil and the salt, those essential EFA, ultimate EFAs, the essential fatty acids out of a bottle. Sprinkle them. Use coconut oil, people. Coconut oil is incredibly filling. Very tasty. Have you ever had coconut oil?
Yeah, it's good. I like it.
Super tasty. Have nut butters, cashew butters. If you're looking for oil, you hit that oil hot button. You're looking to hit the salt hot button. They're nice together. And then protein. Very, very satisfying. Especially look for protein that has the amino acid tryptophan, because your brain will actually read tryptophan levels. So tryptophan is an appetite suppressant. When your brain sees tryptophan, it thinks you just killed a wildebeest. Remember our little model?
From
the African savannah?
Right.
So tryptophan tells your brain, hey, we just had a wildebeest. Turn the appetite center off. You have an appetite center in your brain.
Yeah.
And this is what you're hitting, the appetite center, the satiety center, actually. It's the opposite of the appetite center, but it's the same area. You know, it's a regulatory area that tells you to eat. These are all things that are regulated by the brain. And what you're really talking about here, Kate, is learning to take control of your biochemistry, learning to take control of your brain's chemistry. And to me, that's a powerful idea.
Yeah, no kidding. Pharmacist Ben, we're out of time. Thank you very much. We'll talk.